Members and guests, please rise for the invocation by Representative Fielder and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our Father in heaven, we thank you for the many blessings that you have offered to each of us, to our families, and to the country that we are blessed to live in. We ask that you give us wisdom and guide us in the decisions that we make. We ask for your forgiveness of our faults, and we ask you to help us become better people each day than we were the day before. We ask these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The clerk will take the roll. Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives are present. Representatives Rexton and Whiteman Pena are excused.
A quorum is present and the House is ready for business. Are there any introductions? Representative Caleb Hinkle.
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I have a longtime friend of mine visiting today. I would like to give a very warm welcome to Chase Sick, who's visiting our chamber.
Welcome to the House. Representative Gillette.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to be off the record and out of the journal for purposes of an introduction.
So ordered.
I'd like to give recognition to my good friend, Carrie White, and past representative who's right up there.
Welcome to the House. Seeing no further introductions, without objection, we're going to go to order business number 10.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the following undersigned names be deleted as sponsors to HB 136. Signed, Representative Lola Sheldon Galloway, sponsor.
That objection will go back to order of business number 1, communications and petitions.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business number 2, reports of standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Energy, Technology, and Federal Relations. Recommend that House Bill 103 do pass. Signed, Representative Derek Skies, chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Judiciary. Recommend that House Bills 136 and 140 do pass. 112 and 144 do pass as amended. Signed, Representative Barry Usher, chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Rules. Recommend that House Resolution 2 be adopted as amended. Signed, Representative Derek Skies, chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Rules. Recommend that Senate Joint Resolution 1 be concurred in as amended. Signed, Representative Derek Skies, chair. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business number 3, reports of select committees.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business number 4, messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Senate to inform the House of Representatives that the following Senate bills, Senate joint resolutions, were on this day read 3 several times and passed, title and history agreed to, and are herewith transmitted to the House for concurrence. Senate Bill 1, Carey, 21, McClafferty, 23, Solomon, 24, Solomon. Sincerely, Marilyn Miller, Secretary of the Senate. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Senate to inform the House of Representatives the following House bills, House joint resolutions, were on this day read 3 several times, concurred in title and history agreed to, and are herewith returned to the House. House Bill 1, Jones. Sincerely, Marilyn Miller, Secretary of the Senate. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 5, messages from the Governor.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 6, first reading and commitment of bills.
Mr. Speaker, House Joint Resolution 3 and House Bills 203 through 215 are introduced, read first time, and referred to committee. All are posted. Mr. Speaker, Senate Bills 1, 21, 23, and 24 have been read first time and referred to committee. All are posted. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 7, second reading of bills. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole for consideration of business on second reading.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. I appoint Representative Cafaro, chair of the committee of the whole for the day.
Members of the committee will please be in order. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 34. Clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 34, introduced by Smith, a bill for an act entitled, An Act Recognizing the Federal Recognition of the Little Shell Band of Chippewa Indians, revising laws to reflect federal recognition of 8 Indian tribes in Montana, amending sections and providing an immediate effective date. Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 34, that I recommend the same do pass. Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, this is a very simple bill. It's recognized a little shell band of Chippewas in several places in our MCA. It's got 7 tribes, and as you can see by the numbers there, there's quite a few numbers where it's been moved. And in you see on page 13 on line 4, where it removes 7 tribes and installs the Indian in place of it, and that's all it does. It's about time we recognize these guys, because we had a good senator that made an amendment in federal budget and put the tribes, acknowledge the tribes. This has been going on for a lot longer than most of us in here can remember. So with that, I recommend a do pass. Thank you.
Is there discussion? Representative Wendy Boy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to speak on the bill. You know, as my colleague in a couple rows back here had mentioned that this goes a lot farther back than most of us know. I want to give you a little bit of history lesson on the Ojibwe, because that's a part of my tribe. Back in the mid-1400s, the Ojibwe originated back in the Poconos Mountains of Pennsylvania. And at that time, when the leadership of my tribe at that time was had dreams and visions about the plight heading west. And at that time, when the leaders were told that when these 3 ships come and land, the coming of the fair-skinned man, they suggested that you go to the backbone of Red Turtle Island. And at that time, they didn't know what they're talking about, but where they were referring to was the Rocky Mountains. So when those ships came, that's when the Ojibwe tribe and the Poconos packed up, start heading west. And that's why, as you see that along the way, the Mid-Lakes region, the Great Lakes region, that's why you see a lot of Ojibwe tribes along the way. And I always tease some of my relatives over there that when I see them, I ask them if they heard about our migration story, and they say, yeah, we've heard about it. I said, yeah, we made it over there, a place called Garrison, Montana. I said, but you guys made it halfways and gave up on us and tired out on us. But but anyways, that's kind of what the plight was. And then so that's why, that way, when we did make it over to Garrison, Montana, that was where our people have made it before the 1800s. And during that time, you know, the policies in the federal government about how the natives were being treated. In the 1800s, the federal government put Indian policy under the Department of War. And so that's kind of basically how the federal government had treated us for so long. And so when we finally became United States citizens in 1924, then that's why things have been, the plight has been going on for quite some time. And so I wanted to share just a little bit of that with you, and it's true that my colleague here said that this has been going along a lot farther than a few generations, been going back over 500 years. So, again, you know, I appreciate your green vote on us because this has been a long time coming. Thank you.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsor waves off. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Smith that when the committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 34, it recommend that the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye, those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change? Are there any absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton and Whiteman Pena have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 100 representatives have voted aye.
House Bill 34 has passed second reading. Before we go any further, I wanted to remind people to punch in if you want to speak on the bill, and remote people, especially even if you are thinking you might or you might not punch in, you can always wave off. Thank you. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 53. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 53, introduced by Hamilton, a bill for an act entitled An Act Adopting the Multi-State Tax Commission Proposed Model Statute for Reporting Adjustments to Federal Taxable Income and Federal Partnership Audit Adjustments, Providing Definitions, Providing Rulemaking Authority, Amending Sections, and Providing an Immediate Effective Date and an Applicability Date, Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Hamilton?
Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill number 53, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm bringing you House Bill 53 at the request of the Department of Revenue. This bill did start out as a model bill, as you can see in the title, with the Multi-State Tax Commission, but has since been reworked by groups of tax preparers, the AICPA and so forth, in conjunction with the Department of Revenue. The bill really is intended to add flexibility for partnership taxpayers to settle their liabilities after a federal audit. It's important to remind yourself all the way through this bill that these provisions only apply after a federal audit of a partnership. That's the only place it's going. So the bill has a lot of definitions and details and is kind of dense, but I'm going to condense it down to just a couple of sections for you. So the heart of the bill is contained in Section 3 and Section 4. It's what I would call the what of the bill. Sections 1 and 2 and 3 are basically definitions. Sections 5 and beyond are really the how of putting into practice the what. So imagine you're in a partnership, you've been audited, you have two approaches normally to settle your liabilities. First one is you as the partnership can send those liabilities downstream to your partners. You have to file some forms and you have 90 days to do that. And then each individual partner has to file a form and pay their liability. Or the other approach you can take, and this is what Section 4 does, is it makes available the opportunity for the partnership to pay for all of the partners. So rather than sending it downstream to the partners, they just pay the liability themselves. So think of it this way, that if you had a liability where each partner might have a $50 liability, to push it down to the partners is enormously expensive for everyone. So the partnership might choose to just pay it themselves. And that's what's made available in this. So it's really a help to the partnership folks. I did ask the Department of Revenue, what happens if this bill doesn't pass? What are we missing? And they said, well, at the Department of Revenue, not much is going to change. What changes is the flexibility that partnerships have on how to report this. So it's really for partners we're doing this bill rather than for the Department of Revenue. The rest of the bill really talks about the technical details to put this in place. And so the simple conclusion, I think, here is that the department needs the enabling legislation to allow tax preparers, CPAs, tax professionals, partnerships, and individuals the flexibility to adjust their return in the manner that is best for them. So with that, I ask for a green light.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsor waves off. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Hamilton that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 53, it recommend the same pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representatives Rexton and Whiteman Pena have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote. House Bill 53 has passed second reading without my vote.
Madam Chair, 99 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
Members of the committee, you have before you House Bill 66. For your consideration, the clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 66, introduced by Moore, a bill for an act entitled, An Act Reauthorizing the Securities Restitution Assistance Fund, extending the sunset date of the Restitution Fund to June 30th, 2027, amending section, and providing an immediate effective date, Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Moore?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 66, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Moore.
Well, back with number three on security bills. This bill, House Bill 66, proposes to simply reauthorize the Securities Restitution Assistance Fund, which was sunsetting, and it extends that sunset date to June 30th, 2027. The original fund was first established in 2011. And the fund provides restitution to Montana victims of securities fraud that have been ordered to receive restitution in an order, either from an administrative or criminal matter. These Montana victims are victims of con artists and scamsters that go to prison or that we can't find or have spent their ill-gotten money elsewhere. The fund does not insure the victims against investment losses. But it does assist the victims that have lost money to fraud. As you can see in the bill, victims that are 60 years old or older or meet the definition of a vulnerable adult can receive up to $50,000 or 50% of the ordered restitution that has not been paid, whichever is less. And if you're a younger victim under 60, you can receive $25,000 or 25%. Given that this is an established fund, since 2011, there have been 134 victims that have been paid out of this fund, 110 of which have been the age 60 or older. The total amount that has been distributed to victims has been $1.8 million. And the average claim has been just under $14,000. This fund is funded with a 4.5% income stream from fees paid by the investment company issuers. HB 66 has the support of Montana securities industry, and I would urge your due pass, Madam Chair.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsor is closed. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Moore that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 66, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 100 representatives have voted aye.
House Bill 66 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 71. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 71, introduced by Garner, a bill for an act entitled, An Act Revising Certain Campaign Finance Reporting Deadlines for Municipal Candidates and Political Committees, amending section and providing an immediate effective date. Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Garner?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 71, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Garner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the body. This is a follow-up. This bill is to a bill we passed last session, House Bill 181, that essentially took nine separate calendars at the commissioner's office, turned them into two, so it would improve the expectation for both candidates and committees about when they should report, made it more efficient to them. The follow-up is that we did not anticipate the off-year elections, so municipal elections, which have a different primary date. So this bill would take that same pattern and put it in place for those municipal elections. The problem is if we don't do that, the reporting period is not going to coincide with those different primary dates for municipal elections. So would ask for a do pass on that and stand for questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsors waived off. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Garner when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 71, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 94 representatives have voted aye, 6 have voted no.
House Bill number 71 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 92. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 92, introduced by Kelker, a bill for an act entitled, an act providing compensation for people who have been wrongfully convicted of felony crimes and exonerated, providing a procedure for filing and determining petitions for compensation, providing for expungement of conviction and the payment of damages for successful petitions, providing offsets for damages obtained in other litigation, amending section and providing an effective date, Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Kelker?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 92, that it recommends the same do pass.
Representative Kelker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd appreciate it if you pull out your copy of the bill so we can all understand it together. Today, members of the body, I'm bringing you House Bill 92. An act to provide compensation for people who have been wrongly convicted, imprisoned, and exonerated. On your desk today, you should have received a chart. Looks like this. And if you look in the column that says years lost, you can see actual exonerated prisoners, former prisoners in our prison, who have been wrongly incarcerated and have spent a lot of time in prison. The purpose of this bill is twofold. It's to protect Montana from having to pay millions of dollars in court settlements. That's always a possibility. And to do the right thing for innocent persons who have unjustly lost their freedom, families, jobs, and reputations. HB 92 is a comprehensive bill based upon successful model laws from other states. In fact, this is a committee bill that came out of the Interim Law and Justice Committee. HB 92 has seven policy sections, all of which are new, and they will be codified in Title 46 criminal procedure. So here we go. In the definition sections, there's only two definitions. One is complainant, that's the person who has been found innocent, and imprisonment, how long they have to be in prison in order to qualify. On page one, the second section talks about what goes into a petition that the claimant must make in order to get compensation. An individual who has been proven to be not guilty on retrial or from a pardon can take the step of claiming compensation. The required parts to the claim include states of facts, explaining the basis of the claim, and written verification of the facts. This is not a retrial of the person's innocence. The filing must occur within a period of 3 years after the exoneration. Under this bill, the claimant receives a $5,000 transition assistance grant to help them with expenses as they're leaving prison and getting back to normal life and trying to press their complaint. If the complainant fails to file a claim within the required time of 3 years, or the claim is denied by the district court, the claimant must reimburse the state the amount of $5,000 within 1 year. On page two, there is an explanation of the process of the claim in court. The proceedings for compensation occur in district court in the district where the crime originally occurred. The DOJ provides a defense for the state against the claims filed. The claims then must be tried by a jury unless the jury trial is waived by both parties. To be successful in winning a case, complainants must prove the facts by a preponderance of the evidence. That's the standard. The following are the types of facts to be proved. One, the complainant did not commit the crime which the complainant was convicted.
1 minute.
Or the complainant did not aid, abet, or act as an accomplice. Once this process is finished, if the person is successful, they get a certificate of innocence. And then if you look on page five, the damages that they would receive are $60,000 for each year of imprisonment and $25,000 for each additional year served on parole or probation. The last provision is the offset provision, and what it says is if an exoneree goes ahead and has another lawsuit and gets a monetary compensation, they have to pay back the state what they had been given. So this lays out a good plan for protecting the state and for doing the right thing for someone who was wrongly convicted. I ask for a due pass.
Is there discussion? Representative Mercer.
Madam Chair, I wonder if the sponsor would yield for a question.
Will the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Madam Chair, Representative Kelker, I'd like to ask a question about Section 6. So I'm struggling to understand. It would appear that Section 6 sub 1 contemplates a scenario where the claimant has already sued the state or reached a settlement agreement with the state, and there's been an amount that was awarded pursuant to that settlement or the litigation. Am I interpreting it correctly that the person then could come in the door through this new system and actually get more than they got having sued and or previously settled with the state?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's not quite it. I understand your question, however. First of all, an individual who has been proven innocent can always go into a federal court on a civil rights case, and they would be open to that opportunity. If they received a big settlement of some kind, then they would have to pay back the state. In other words, it's not an opportunity to you game the system. What we want to do is to have the individual get as quickly the compensation that they need. And the evidence in other states who have this law is that the persons who get compensation from the state, as described here, are very unlikely to go further for settlements because it takes so awfully long to get through the courts.
May I have a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Does the sponsor continue to yield?
I yield.
So Madam Chair, Representative Kelker, you're right. I don't understand this because it looks like Section 1 contemplates that the claimant on the claims that we're talking about being wrongfully convicted and then incarcerated, this seems to contemplate that they would have actually already litigated that, and then this would be a mechanism to say you could seek relief from this new fund, but you would need to deduct whatever you had already recovered, which seems inconsistent with the idea that they had already fully resolved whatever claim they brought, whatever form they brought it in. So can you clarify that?
Madam Chair? Yes, I can. Let's back up. The individual that we're talking about would be offered the compensation route that is in this bill, and they can choose it or not choose it, of course. Usually people coming out of prison, especially after years and years, have almost nothing to their name and very little support system. So getting into a lengthy lawsuit is difficult for them. So in all of the states that have this kind of bill, and there are lots of them, they have chosen to be right in at the beginning when the person is coming out of prison and offering this opportunity for damages from the state. And that is kind of guaranteed in that they are actually exonerated in our state, and we are the ones who are responsible for the fact that they were wrongly incarcerated. But we have no way of stopping them or making their choices for them. All I can tell you is that other states have passed this bill, and they have done so that it costs much less for them.
Madam Chair, may I have one additional follow-up question to the sponsor?
Will the sponsor continue to yield?
Yes.
Madam Chair, and my colleague from Yellowstone County, is it the case that we're only talking about those who were released from custody before the 1st of July, and this only pertains to actions that are commenced by the 1st of July 2024? So a narrow essentially a three-year window of applicability.
No, it's meant to be the plan for now and the future.
All right, thank you very much.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the sponsor, please.
Will the sponsor yield?
Representative.
Thank you, Representative Kelker. To me, it's always all about the money here. So when he goes to the bottom on the technical notes, and an amendment will handle this note. Only the House can add an appropriation amendment to the bill, although the Senate could add a language coordination. So then I take a look at your white sheet, and I look at your two pending, just trying to come up with an amount, and I see two folks on the bottom of it, 15 years and 28.5 years. If I sum those together, and I don't know the amount of time they're on parole, but just doing rough math, and assuming that they potentially qualify, which again is an assumption on my part, but they apparently are on this list for a reason, that's $2.6 million. But we have a fiscal note that shows nothing. But I do agree with the bottom line. The fiscal note on this bill is potentially substantial, yet there is no funding source, and there's an amendment that will address this. Would you please speak to that?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, as the bill was dropped, it did not have an amendment on it that said where the money was coming from. And the reason for that is that, remember that this is a committee bill. It came out of an interim study. And we tried to work with the folks in tort liability, in state administration, And at that time, it was sort of the crossover between one governor and another, and they were not willing to make any commitment. So in our Judiciary Committee, when the bill was seen there, one of the members of the committee put an amendment on the bill saying that we would use that liability route, which is how the state pays for other kinds of liabilities, and that's as far as it's gone.
Representative Ferris Olson.
Madam Chair, members of the body, I just had a quick disclosure to make. I represent one of the individuals identified, Richard Burkhart, on the handout from the good representative. That's the sponsor. Thanks.
Representative Ferris Olson, are you finished?
Yes, I am.
Thanks,
Madam Chair.
Representative Knave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will the sponsor yield for a question?
Will the sponsor yield?
Yes, I yield.
I'm looking at the chart on the white sheet.
Yes.
And using the numbers in the bill, calculating what the payouts would be, and they are considerably less than what has already been shown on here. Please help me understand, one, in the bill, the person who is affected has an option of choosing this or doing a civil suit. And the second part of that is, does this cap what the state would be required to pay if there was indeed a civil suit?
Madam Chair, I think I hear two questions. Am I correct? Well, first of all, looking on at the chart, partly the reason it is the way it is I wanted to show you how much some people have already received. If they have already received these monies, they would not be eligible. There is no cap at this time, and that would be a kind of a legal discussion whether there could be a cap, because it goes into the courts, and all we can do is we have specified what the damages would be, and it's not another court case for the person. They just have to demonstrate that they were found innocent. They could choose another route. We can't stop them from doing that.
Representative Jay Hinkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, if I may speak to the bill.
Representative Hinkle.
Thank you. Members of the body, I feel like I owe the body an explanation of what went on in the committee concerning the questions of a good representative from Yellowstone County there. It is true. I mean, the bill is kind of sold to us as... It's sold to us as an either-or. So they can either collect, you know, a claimant in this situation can collect the damages on the top of page 5, the $60,000 per year for imprisonment, or the $25,000 for each year served in parole. Or they could sue the state. But as it was determined here in the bill, as you read further, they can collect the damages and then also sue the state after that. So we did have some debate in committee. There were actually two amendments brought. One of them would have prohibited, if they collected the damages on the top of page 5, if they went for that, then they would not be able to sue the state again in federal or state court. So that they would be prohibited from doing that. And then there was another amendment that was brought that, if you look on page 6, lines 20 and 21, there's a line that's in the offset provision. So if they did sue the state again, you have this offset provision that says, well, whatever they sued the state for, then the money will be deducted from what they were awarded to pay back the state what they had earned in the claims on the top of page 5, except for the attorney fees. So there's some of the debate, okay, well, some of this litigation takes 10 years. How much in attorney fees is that? So that you know, is increasing. So we had an amendment to strike out the word less any amount paid to attorneys for the actual cost. So if they made a claim for and were awarded damages for $600,000, they spent $400,000 in attorney fees. They sued the state by suing the state, again, in federal or state court. They were awarded $1 million. Well, they would still pay back the $600,000, including the attorney's fees. And over much debate, in my opinion, unfortunately, both those amendments died. The reason why I supported the bill and others supported the bill is because we do believe in, from an individual in this type of situation whose life has been ruined, you know, they do need to be compensated and made whole. However, the amendments were proposed to somehow try and protect the taxpayer in this, because in my opinion, you know, we have a judge, we have a jury, we have a prosecutor, and those entities made the wrong decision at that point. And it doesn't mean that the entire state of Montana, it shouldn't fall onto the entire state of Montana. So that's why we tried to oppose or bring those amendments. They did fail. The bill is as is. But you understand why we did support the bill as a committee as a whole. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Usher.
Madam Chair, I'd like to speak to the bill.
Speak to the bill.
And actually, after that, I need to take a breath, because this bill came out of Law and Justice. It was vetted with everyone involved, all the parties, the county attorneys, everybody was at the table. It is a bill that's gone across the country to approximately 30 states. Out of those 30 states, those persons that qualified and put this claim into their state only further sued the state in federal court 10% of the time. So if you look at the claims on the worksheet that was put on your desk, would you rather us pay out, I think it says $97 million. I'm sure I don't see that many zeros without my glasses on. And I can't find my glasses. There they are. Anyway, would you rather pay that out, or would you rather pay, as I think someone calculated, approximately $3 million? That lawsuit probably or could have taken 10 years for that person that we wrongfully convicted and put in our prisons. It could take them 10 years to get that money. They have no skills. They don't have a family like all their friends have. We took all that away from them by wrongly convicting them. What the intent of this is to get money in their pockets so they can go to school, so they can create a new career. They're not going to be awarded the state based on welfare or homelessness or whatever. So I think the choices are, do we want to save some money and get these people so they're not jumping onto our welfare and our unemployment or whatever programs that they can qualify for? So it did come out, and we vetted all that through Law and Justice. It'll save us millions. Then it came out of Judiciary, and as the good representative just explained, there were a lot of amendments proposed. One of the amendments he's talking about that he's disappointed didn't stay on, we had to, because of one of the amendments he was speaking about, we actually had to go back and reconsider our actions because it gutted the bill. I mean, it basically took everything out of the bill. No settlements, no anything. So I'm glad that one didn't stay on it, and glad we caught that before it actually came up to the floor. The other one is they were speaking about attorney fees. The attorney fees spoken about in the bill is only the attorney fees for filing of the claim, which may take a year to file the claim and do the paperwork and the process. That's not reimbursing for any attorney fees for the lawsuit that they still have the right to do. They got to come up with that on their own. So we're only talking about, you know, maybe
I'm not an attorney, so I don't know what we charge, but it could be, you know, $10,000 in legal fees just to get up to the filing and this claim. So it's a good bill. It did come out of Law and Justice Interim Committee, which I was chairman of. And remember, that's a bipartisan committee, which Representative which the good sponsor was on, and a lot of other good representatives and senators. It came out of Judiciary.
1 minute.
And I ask you to support this bill so we can take care of those people that we have wrongfully convicted. Last point I forgot. Someone mentioned they wanted to spread the wealth out if a county attorney or someone else did something wrong for the original conviction. They have qualified immunity. That's why it is spread across the state of Montana. Anybody can sue the state of Montana, and it gets spread across all the taxpayers. This is no different than that. So the points, I guess, are invalid. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a member of the Judiciary Committee who deliberated this bill twice, I rise in support of this bill. It is the right thing to do. It will save Montana money in the long run, but that's not the important thing. The people affected by this bill were wronged. Their life was ruined. They will never recover the lost years that they missed out on. And yeah, I'm fiscally conservative, and I don't want to spend money that we don't need to spend, but this is one of those times when we need to do the right thing. And I urge you to join me in giving this bill a due pass.
Representative Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise as a voice for the true victims of these incidents. I see on this sheet that looks like 4 murders. Of course, one of those, it's the same person with two suspects. The issue is our system is not perfect. In fact, if you've ever been to a jury trial, you hear that they need proof beyond a reasonable doubt, not proof beyond all doubt or no imaginable doubt. The jury made the best decision they could with the information provided. If information was malignantly provided to that jury by the prosecution or the investigators, then yes, I think we need to go after them and figure out how to do the victims, those wrongfully convicted. The other terms I think that are worth mentioning is there's a difference between innocent and wrongfully convicted. Of course, you rise that in this level of evidence all the way to proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So my no vote is a voice for the victims, the true victims of these crimes, the sexual assault, the assault, the child sex abuse, and the murders.
There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor waves off. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Kelker that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 92, that it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 93 representatives have voted aye, 7 have voted no.
House Bill 92 has passed second reading. Members, you now have before you for your consideration House Bill 97. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 97, introduced by McCamey, a bill for an act entitled An Act Clarifying Ethics Enforcement and Requirements as They Pertain to Members of Certain Boards, Commissions, and Committees, and Amending Sections. Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative McCamey?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill number 97, that the recommend the same do pass, Madam Chair.
Representative McCamey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the body. This is a bill that was requested by the Commissioner of Political Practices. House Bill 97 clarifies Montana Code of Ethics enforcement for state and local members of boards and commissions. House Bill 97 corrects the Code of Ethics to include enforcement for the public employee members of boards, commissions, and committees
fulfilling the constitutional obligation of the legislature to provide a code of ethics for all state and local officers and employees. Montana Constitution, Article 13, Section 4. A recent Montana Supreme Court decision held that members of certain boards, commissions, and committees are public employees who are subject to the Code of Ethics. However, as the statute is written, there is no one responsible for enforcing violations by the members of certain boards, commissions, and committees of state and local governments. The Montana Code of Ethics currently designates enforcement to the Commissioner of Political Practices for state elected officials and state employees. House Bill 97 includes enforcement through the COPP for state boards and commissions as intended. The Montana Code of Ethics currently designates enforcement to county attorneys or designated ethics board for local elected officials and employees. House Bill 97 includes enforcement, county attorneys, or designated ethics board for local board and commissions as intended. Simply, House Bill 97 ensures enforcement of the Code of Ethics by the COPP for state boards and commissions and county attorneys for local board and commissions, fulfilling the legislature's constitutional obligation. And at this time, I will stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion of Representative McKamey that when the committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 97, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 89 representatives have voted aye, 11 have voted no.
House Bill 97 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 100. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 100, introduced by Heyman, a bill for an act entitled, An Act Revising Community College District Audit Requirements, requiring community college districts to contract with private accounting firm for audits, requiring a community college district to provide estimated audit costs to the budget director, and to pay for any costs not covered by the legislative appropriation, amending sections and providing an effective date. Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Heyman?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 100, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Heyman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 100 revises community college audit requirements. Requiring the community colleges to contract with private accounting firm for their audits. Are you getting feedback?
Nope.
Okay, sorry. Requiring the community colleges to provide estimated audit costs to the budget director and to pay for any costs not covered by legislative appropriation. The legislative auditor is currently responsible for these audits and contracts with public accounting firms for this work. Contract costs for the fiscal year 2019 and 2020 audits of the Miles City and Dawson Community Colleges exceeded the maximum amounts in House Bill 2 from the 66th legislative session by a total of $31,248. The excess amount will be paid from the audit division's carry forward authority. The legislative auditor believes continuing to commit a portion of the division's available budget to these audit costs is not a sustainable long-term solution. Division staff work with representatives from the community colleges and the Office of Commissioner of Higher Education to identify options for avoiding this situation in the future. House Bill 100 is a result of those efforts. Community college personnel propose contract management responsibilities be transferred to them, anticipating local connections may allow them to secure a lower price and develop productive relationships with the audit team. This change is addressed through Section 2 of the bill. General fund support for these audits has been in place for many years, and this bill will not result in any changes in the level of state support for these audits. This bill will not result in any reduction in the level of legislative oversight of the community colleges. The legislative auditor will keep approval authority for the audit contract, and the audit reports will still be available to the Legislative Audit Committee. This bill received bipartisan support of the Legislative Audit Committee, and I do ask for a green vote.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor waves off. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Heyman that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 100, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 100 representatives have voted aye.
House Bill 100 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 133. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Madam Chair, House Bill 133, introduced by Anderson, a bill for an act entitled, an act creating an anti-littering sign special revenue account to be funded by donation, providing for the making and installation of anti-littering signs paid for by donated money, providing rulemaking authority, providing a statutory appropriation, amending section, and providing an effective date. Madam Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 133, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, members of the Committee of the Whole, this bill proposes the creation of a special revenue account to be funded by donations, providing for the making and installation of anti-littering signs to be paid for by donated money. Last session, I had a bill to provide for anti-littering signs across the state, but when the fiscal note came up of $400,000, it was a deal breaker. This bill provides for signage to be paid for by donations, whether it be by organizations or philanthropic groups. And with that, Madam Chair and committee members, as a matter of information, the fine for littering in Montana is to $250, other than with lighted materials. If you throw out matches or dump your ashtray or have something burning goes out, the fine is $500. And so this bill will provide for some signage for the state, and hopefully the donation money will come in the special revenue account. If it doesn't, there's no cost to the state, and nothing will be done. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll sit if there's any questions.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor waves off. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Anderson that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 100, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. Excuse me, House Bill 133. Are there absentee votes?
Madam Chair, Representative Rexton has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? House Bill 133 has passed second reading. Oh, if not, the clerk will record the vote.
Madam Chair, 94 representatives have voted aye. 6 have voted no.
House Bill 133 has passed second reading. The chair recognizes Majority Leader Vinton.
Madam Chair, I move the committee rise and report.
You've heard the motion of Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor say yes. Those opposed, no.
Aye.
The ayes have it. So ordered.
gavel.
Mr. Speaker, we, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration business on second reading, recommend as follows.
I move adoption of the committee report. You've heard the motion to adopt the committee report. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed will vote no. Clerk, record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
The committee report has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Cafaro. Order business number of 8, third reading of bills.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 56, introduced by Logie, a bill for an act entitled Revised Tire Chain Laws to Provide for Enforcement.
House Bill 56 having been read three several times, the question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 83 representatives have voted aye. 16 have voted no.
House Bill 56 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 70, introduced by Homeland, a bill for an act entitled to revise state suicide prevention program.
House Bill 70, having been read three several times, the question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye. 1 has voted no.
House Bill 70 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 76, introduced by Frazier, a bill for an act entitled to revise Montana VEBA provisions.
House Bill 76, having read three several times, the question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 99 representatives have voted aye. 0 have voted no.
House Bill 76 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 85, introduced by Cheetah, a bill for an act entitled Revising Utility Cost Tracking and Recovery Laws.
House Bill 85, having read three several times, the question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye. 1 has voted no.
House Bill 85 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 111, introduced by Fuller, a bill for an act entitled Revise Income Tax Law to Exempt Military Pensions.
House Bill 111, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 61 representatives have voted aye. 38 have voted no.
House Bill 111 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 124, introduced by Mitchell, a bill for an act entitled Suffering Wildlife Protection Act.
House Bill 24, having been read three several times, the question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 58 representatives have voted aye. 41 have voted no.
House Bill 124 has passed the House.
That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business number 9, motions. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 66, Reauthorize Securities Restitution Fund, to the Appropriations Committee, Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 92, Establish Compensation Program for Wrongfully Convicted Individuals, to the Appropriations Committee, Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered. Seeing no more. Order business number 10, unfinished business.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 11, special orders of the day.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 12, announcements of committee meetings. Representative Lenz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Human Services will meet today, 3 o'clock in room 152.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section F tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m.
Representative Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section A will not meet tomorrow morning.
Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Natural Resources, no meeting Friday.
Representative Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, room 172, 3 o'clock, 1 bill, 1 EA. Thank you.
Representative Holmland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section C at 9 o'clock Monday morning. No meeting tomorrow. We will be meeting in room 317C, and we'll begin DEQ's budget.
Representative Welch.
House Tax, Friday morning at 9 a.m., room 152. We will have a presentation from fiscal staff on the coal tax mechanics and also some executive action. 9 o'clock tomorrow.
Representative Custer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Local Government, 3 o'clock, room 472, two bills.
Representative Matt Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section B, tomorrow morning, 102, at 8 o'clock.
Representative McKinney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House State Administration, tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, in room 455, two bills, two EA. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Appropriations, upon adjournment, we have one bill, three executive actions.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section D, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., room 317A, a continuation of the Department of Corrections budget hearing.
Representative Skeets.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House energy is caught up, so no meeting tomorrow. We'll see you on Monday at 3 p.m.
Representative Cashmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House ag today, 3 o'clock, room 137, one bill, executive action.
Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section E, tomorrow, 8:30, 472, third day of hearings on higher education budgets.
Representative Logie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No Transportation Committee meeting tomorrow.
Representative Burgley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Education will not be meeting tomorrow. No House Education on Friday.
Representative Usher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Judiciary, room 137, 8 a.m. tomorrow, and a great job done today.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Business and Labor tomorrow morning, 8:30.
Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn and reconvene Friday, the 15th legislative day at 1 p.m.
You've heard the motion, Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House will reconvene at 1 p.m. on Friday, January 22nd. The House is adjourned.